The Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen Municipal District is Councillor Martin McDermott and is with me now. Long time no speak, Martin. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, you are helping to encourage people living in older homes in the county and I suppose in the region to have their electrical systems checked off the back of a number of instances. So what has been going on?
Yeah, I suppose over the last year, Greg, in particular, there's been a number of instances where electrical wiring has deteriorated quite drastically, particularly in older homes. These would be homes that would have, you know, the old red and black wiring.
Mm.
And what happens is the sheath around the wire deteriorates and it melts. It goes into like a gloop and then it short circuits the switch or the light or whatever electrical component, it short circuits it, and then that can cause a fire. There's been probably 6 or 7 houses I would have seen in the last year that this has happened to. I've had a number of electricians, I've been out with a number of electricians as well looking at this, and we've had to get the council involved in a couple of instances where we got the grant. You know, there's a grant through the council for getting your wiring redone.
We had to get that done.
For a number of people. So it's something that I think, you know, it's vitally important that particularly people living alone and older homes get their electrics checked, get their wiring checked. And, you know, anyone over 65 living alone, there is a grant available through the council. That grant is increasing now in January up to 8,000 for electrical work. So I will be encouraging people to get it checked and get the grant from the council to get your wiring redone.
Yeah, because in at least one of the most recent instances, it was by chance, really, that we didn't see a fatality, Martin.
Absolutely. It was just by chance that an elderly man was living in a house where this has happened, and one of the lights went on fire. He had to be taken out of the house then, and thanks to the community in Kilmany, they got him into the centre there, and the electrician out there got the work done pretty quickly. And again, through the local authority, through the council, we got a grant sorted out for him for that house. But that could have been something completely different, and that's my fear here, and that's why I've asked the local authority to do an information on this, to get it out there, to people and let people know that there is a grant available to get those remedial works done if their wiring is deteriorating. And I think it's important, Greg, that we send that round the whole country from our council, and that's what I've asked them to do last Monday, because this could actually save a life somewhere. And, you know, it is quite dangerous, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to scare people either. You know, it's just a matter of getting your electrics checked. Electrician will know whether it needs done or not. And as I say, there's a grant available for people.
We're talking about private houses. I presume if there are any council stock of an age, or if there is any council stock of an age, that checking the wiring in those houses is part and parcel of the landlordship.
Yeah, absolutely, and the local authority did acknowledge that on Monday, that that's something they're going to have to do with their houses as well, check their own stock.
Oh, right, okay, so it's not necessarily
done... The local
authority
would have a number of houses of that age.
Yeah, okay, right, okay. And of course, too, there's houses of a certain age that were built on property, on land the council still retains ownership of as well, so I presume they would be caught into this.
Exactly,
yeah, all right, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Because they can lead out.
It's important that they do it.
Yeah, they can lead out and set an example.
And gets it out there to more people, and the same through yourselves.
Yeah, there was. We were talking to the council last week about a series, or maybe it was the week before, about a series of events that have been held or will be held around the county. I know there's a public information events about, you know, vacant property refurbishment grants, SEAI, home energy supports, etc. There's only two left, I think, Thursday in Onclohanlia. And also December 1st, Ballybofey Snawler. Would there be information at those meetings about what we're talking about now?
Yeah, well, the director of service did mention that on Monday as well, that they were holding events. It was just that some of the events has already been happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there will be council staff there that would know this now. And at those events, there is a stand that gives you information on a grant on different grants for different, whether it be for electrics, whether it be for a new roof, whether it be for windows, whether it be for access to the house. So they will be there to give information on that, and they will explain to people how they go about getting the grant for electrics.
And as you say, we don't want to instill any fear into anyone. This is public service announcement, so to speak, to get it checked if you feel your house might fall under this criteria. But what it is a great reminder for, because this is your best defence until such time, well, against anything that is fire-related, is properly working fire alarms in the right place. That includes one in the bedroom where you might spend 8, 9, 10 hours a day, a fire alarm, I think head height in the bedroom as well. No harm having them, because there was a great initiative actually during the pandemic where young people, I think it was out of the Kilmacrenan area, they were going around to older people's houses and checking fire alarms, you know, to make sure they were in date, to make sure they had batteries, to make sure they were functioning, you know, so maybe older people can check that themselves, or if they have trouble getting up to wherever they might be, get someone around. That's our first defence in the meantime, to make sure you've got fire alarms in the right place where you can hear them, because that's, especially with Christmas trees and electric fires going on and stuff like that, Martin, where there might be more draw on energy.
And as part of that, as part of the grant, Greg, when you get the electrics done, that does be done along with that. They do the alarms connected to the electric as well, as part of upgrading your electric. So that would all be done as part of that grant if you were able to facilitate and get that grant.
I must ask you, whilst I have you on, and not to take away from that important issue, but onto another important issue, and that is a cabinet meeting that's taking place. Defective concrete block grant cap is on the agenda, I understand. A 10% increase has been announced ages ago, it seems, at that stage. Are people yet able to avail of that 10%?
So that's going to cabinet today.
Did you say, Greg? No? Sorry, I missed the first line. Was the first word? Okay, go ahead.
They won't be able to avail of it just yet, but I mean, it's a big step today that it's going to cabinet. What happens after that, it goes to the Dáil and then to the Senate and then for signing. So it will be at the Dáil next week and the following week and the 9th and 10th in the Dáil, and then I think it's the 15th and 16th in the Senate, and then it has to be signed by the new president. So by Christmas, we should have the legislation passed, and that would open the door then for early January. People will be able to avail of that increase and be able to contact the local authority to get the recalculation done and get the increase in rate. Let it be the 420 up to 462, or the 8% increase that's going on the square foot rate. So if someone is less than the 462 or 420, they still can get that 8% increase in square foot rate. So that legislation is going through. There's also the legislation for increasing the 65 weeks to 130 weeks, because the time to build a house wasn't long enough. There were people getting caught out, as we discussed in your show a number of times, Greg.
Yes.
And also, we are changing the when you can apply for an extension. At the minute, it's 3 months out from the finish of your build, which is too far out for someone to know when they're going to be finished. That's going to change now to 2 weeks. Out from your bowl.
Of course, for this increase, there's a retrospective element to it, but people early on to the scheme, I think, you know, close on 50 homes, this is the time, if there were going to be any changes, to include them. Do you know if there are any proposals to widen this? It's a small enough amount of people. It's a small enough, potentially, amount of money. What's the story?
43 applicants. There's 43 applicants that has fallen out of that date of the 29th of March 2024. So in what the minister sent out today, he does acknowledge that, and he did say that he would look at that. So I think as part of the process now through the Dáil, I think there'll be an opportunity for people to have that have that conversation with them to try and change that date, or if that date can be changed. So, but he does acknowledge that in what he sent out today, that those 43 families were fall outside that.
Yeah, I just
probably
think it's
not
so
all
important
of those 43 families, but a number of them.
I just think it's so important for the, I mean, obviously, listen, the scheme has its faults, as people have highlighted, but if it does an awful lot for its public relations if it's seen to be fair and inclusive and not punishing people. And in terms of the wider scale of what this would cost to satisfy the concerns of those 43 families, It's chicken feed, really, and I think it would do an awful lot for the public face of this scheme if they were included.
Certainly would, Greg. It certainly would. And there's also an amendment coming in that will allow when the new IS-465 is updated, it will allow people to get their review done. That as part of this as well, because legislation had a change for that. So there's a number of things. Side by side is not part of that, but side by side, hopefully, in the next short period of time, there's a bit of extra work to do to that because of some legalities, and that has been worked through at the minute. So hopefully that will be coming to Cabinet and coming to the Dáil very shortly.
I don't have access to Minister Charlie McConnellogue, as you know. Do you know if he will be arguing on the floor of the Dáil for what we've been talking about here in terms of inclusion and extension?
Well, as Charlie has been certainly working on this and has met a number of those families to discuss that date of the 29th of March. So I'm sure he has had conversations with Minister Brown about this and with the department officials. How the minister and how the officials work this out, I suppose we don't know that at the minute, but that, I suppose, will be worked out over the next few weeks.
Graham Hygut, thank you very much indeed. Councillor Martin McDermott Cahirlock of the Inishowen Municipal District there. Greg, would the councillor agree that there should be annual inspections of house wiring for reasons of insurance? You mean everybody's house? I don't know if that's I don't know if that's practical. I mean the standard of wiring past a certain point is much higher. How it's insulated, how it's run, the rules that governed its insulation, etc. We're talking about, and I remember back in the day in our house, there was a downstairs switch, and every time you used it, you got a wee jig, and it got to the point where you just took the jig to switch the light on to run up the stairs. That was the old type of wiring, and I'm not in any way trivialising it, but there's lots of that stuff will happen, trips, switches going, all that kind of stuff. But obviously the sleeve had melted, and there was some wires touching, and every time you switch the light off and on, you get a wee jig up your arm. So it's to ensure that something like that doesn't turn into a very serious matter that could lead to a house fire, etc. Now, are you in a toxic friendship? Of course, friendship is supposed to be about, you know, both parties having more enriched lives. They're there when you need them, not just at the good times, but when times aren't great either. But maybe you are in a toxic friendship. Let's find out more about this by Fiona, or from Fiona O'Malley, CEO of Turn to Me. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much for joining us. This is going to resonate, I think, with an awful lot of people out there, mm-hmm. because I think there are a lot of people that are in toxic friendships that aren't good for them. And what is one of the first indicators? Is it that the friendship seems one-sided? Maybe not always when things are going great for both parties. Maybe there's not as much contact when your friend is happy, but all of a sudden the phone's beeping all the time when they're in a crisis. But they might not be there for you in a crisis. So is that one of the first sort of indicators?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I suppose when we look at romantic relationships, if any of our friends or family members was in a toxic romantic relationship, we would tell them to get out ASAP. But for some reason, people tend to stay in toxic friendships a little bit longer, sometimes even decades. And yes, the first sign that you are in a toxic friendship, as you say, is the relationship feels one-sided. You're always the one giving. The other person's always the one taking your time, your emotional support, your help. And you never receive the same effort in return, and that can be lead to an imbalance, which can become quite unhealthy. Friendships should always feel reciprocal, giving on both sides, and it shouldn't be draining for you.
But instantly, if you're a good person, Fiona, you're going to start questioning yourself, aren't you, and going, well, you know, she's or he's had it tough, and if I was a good friend, I need to be there. And you endure it, and then you hang up the phone or you leave that lunch, and you yourself, you're starting to feel negative, but yet you persist.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's not to say to not be there for people. Obviously, people have been through, you know, awful times, and that's life. You know, we can't be wrapped in bubble wrap. And unfortunately, very bad things happen throughout our lives, and of course we have to be there for our friends when they need us. But the test really comes from a good friendship if you are always the one giving. So, for example, you know, years ago I was friends with this girl. She was, you know, I think I was just dazzled by her. She's very funny, very glamorous. And I felt kind of like I was just being a good friend. I was always giving and she was always taking. But I always thought, look, you know, she is going through a difficult period. But I suppose in hindsight, when I was reflecting on it, I thought a lot of the difficulties and the dramas were kind of self-inflicted or self-created. And I suppose the changing point in the friendship for me was when my father passed away over 10 years ago. And she was in Dublin at the time. The funeral was in Dublin, and she didn't turn up to the funeral, didn't send me a text, didn't call me or anything. So for me, I just kind of thought that spoke volumes. I didn't, if she couldn't get out something in work, or you know, a text would have sufficed. And if she felt awkward about a phone call, just a brief message would have sufficed. So when there's that level of selfishness in the friendship and you're not getting anything in return, it can be time to consider severing the friendship.
You were there just to bounce problems off, but you didn't matter enough really for someone to step in when a text would have mattered. And of course, you know, it's very good to talk and even to strangers. I think a lot of this is surface stuff, you know, not necessarily the deep, very deep stuff, because we can all have friends that will require more attention because maybe they suffer from a mental health issue or what have you. But I think a lot of the time what we're talking about is the surface emotional stuff and how we react to that. In a toxic relationship too, is it always the case, or is this a separate type of toxicity where it's like a controlling relationship? In other words, you're not as good as you think you are, or you're not, I am the only person really that would be friends with you because, you know, I'm that type of a character. That's a level of toxicity, but that might not always be present.
Yes, absolutely. It's a huge level of toxicity, and that, I suppose, criticism or comparisons are kind of putting you down, chipping away at your confidence, undermining you in front of others, subtle jabs, teasing that goes a little bit too far, constant criticism. And if you try to push back and kind of say, oh, you know, like, you know, don't say that, or that's a little bit harsh, and they might just say, oh, we're just having the banter, or I'm just having the crack. But when it's hurtful and they don't reassess their behaviour and their words, that's certainly a red flag, because friends should always lift you up and they shouldn't tear you down.
That's the default. A friendship, the person that you're friends with should always make you feel the best version of yourself, or at least neutral. Do you know what I mean? Certainly no negativity. And also too, I see some friendships whereby it appears like the friends, like there's boundaries being crossed. For an example, that the friends are really just you know, background for social media content, or the butt of a social media joke or something. So in other words, the person who holds the account always comes out looking great, but the friend perhaps doesn't, or is an afterthought, or is behind the scenes. And I'm just giving a sort of a modern day example of how boundaries might be stepped on by a friend who's effectively a toxic friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Boundary violations are a major red flag, and that can be in the form of ridicule, you being the butt of a joke, pushing you into uncomfortable situations, demanding constant access to your time, ignoring any of your needs. They're all boundary violations. And another red flag, I suppose, which is kind of linked to that, is if the friendship is full of drama or conflict, constant arguments, jealousy, competitiveness, or if the friendship just feels very chaotic, and that can really take a toll on your mental well-being. Healthy friendships are stable, they're not turbulent. One of the best examples of a friendship is when it's not high maintenance and you pick up where you left off. Yeah. And some friendships, you don't have to speak to them every day and you don't have to speak to them every week, but when you do touch base, or you have that you know, catch up, or you meet, and it feels like, you know, you've just always got each other's backs. Yeah. And you can always read each other, and you're always there for each other as well.
We talk about ghosting in romantic relationships. I think ghosting is weaponized in a toxic relationship as well, whereby someone cuts ties or doesn't contact you, and then you start wondering, what did I do wrong? What, that last message or that last conversation, what, it can really have an emotional impact on someone in a platonic friendship being ghosted as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I was talking to one of my friends about toxic friendships, and this exact subtopic came up of ghosting. And she said when she was in college and the group of friends she was in, she said they were probably a little bit bitchy when she looks back in hindsight, but they just all ghosted her one day and they stopped talking to her, and she was playing things over and over again in her head, conversations they had, and it was really torturous for her. So that was just an incredibly cruel thing. And I know sometimes, if there's conflict in a friendship, oftentimes it can be a form of misunderstanding, miscommunication, misinterpretation. So it's always good, even though this conversation might be a little bit difficult, it's always good to like sit someone down or to kind of say, listen, I didn't think it was really sound when, you landed me in it there, or you threw me under the bus, and have that discussion and kind of thrash it out and try to get over it. But just ghosting people completely is really cruel because it deprives the person of being able to address the issue, solve the conflict, and get over it.
Ghosting
And
and
that.
I think ghosting and the silent treatment, ironically, because often nothing is said, are some of the most cruelest weapons in a fallout or in a disagreement. It's horrendous to do it to somebody, in my humble
Yeah,
opinion.
absolutely. Yeah. And
Okay.
I used to be friends with this girl when I was in college, and she had an awful habit. If she was annoyed at you, she would just kind of ignore you. And I lived with this girl. So I just addressed it one day and I said, look, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not intimidating. If you have an issue, let's just talk about it. If I've done something wrong, let's talk about it. But I suppose being that level of assertiveness is or having that level of assertiveness is important in a friendship. And friendships can good friendships can endure these difficult conversations. And it's quite an immature thing to kind of, even though sometimes people mightn't want the conflict or they mightn't want the conversation, it is also an immature and a cruel reaction to someone doing you wrong, just cutting them out of your life and just ghosting them altogether, because again, it deprives them of that opportunity to address it and to overcome the issue.
Now, talking about how to heal from toxic friendship, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I actually think people need to actually, before they even go anywhere down the route of it, is to have respect for them, to have an understanding of their importance, and to decide, right, I can work on this friendship or I can bring stuff up, but I think the starting point is that for me, no friendship with this person is better than a bad friendship. You know, because often what happens is we can romanticize when things are good or think when they're happy, and that can be 10% of a 100% relationship. So I think people need to know their worth and how good they are, and that they'd make a very good friend to someone, but also to say to themselves, this bad negative relationship is it's better to have no relationship than that. And then maybe go through some steps as to how you can reset the boundaries or repair the relationship. Would you agree or disagree, Fiona, and pick up from there how you heal from a toxic relationship or even heal that relationship?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that approach. If the friendship is 90% toxic, there's no point kind of romanticizing the 10% good and staying in a prolonged friendship. But people are very hesitant to leave friendships, particularly childhood friends, long-term friends, or particularly if the friendship is part of a wider group, you don't want to lose the whole group of friends. So I would certainly create distance, or if it's too toxic, to just end the friendship, set those boundaries. If you decide to maintain some level of connection, be clear about what behavior is acceptable, what isn't, then lean on other healthy support networks, friends, family members, professionals. Surrounding yourself with positive influences can help rebuild that confidence that you've lost. And importantly, this is probably the most important step, is to broaden your friendship circles, so to make new friends. And the older we get, the more difficult it is to make new friends, because when we think about school, college, or workplace, a lot of our social circles are almost pre-made, or certainly very easily accessible. But when we get older, a lot of those circles fall away.
Yeah, but
So we
Fiona,
really
on
have to push
relation to that,
ourselves.
let's switch that into a positive. If there's a Sunday morning walking club, it's very
Yes, yeah.
likely there's eight other people there that are in exactly your position. They've either moved to an area or, they've had kids and their friends haven't, or what have you. I agree, it's difficult, but there's lots of people going to various different events. It could be anything, walking, football, tag rugby, or stuff that's not physical, an arts class, whatever it might be. Learn a new language, for crying out loud. You will encounter very like-minded good people who probably you have more in common than you ever realised with.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I tell people all the time is if you follow your hobbies, you won't go far wrong, particularly when it comes to making new friends. And you hit the nail on the head there. You'll probably meet people that are like-minded. And if they're like-minded, you're probably more likely to get on with them. And if you have shared commonalities and common interests, then you certainly will have in-depth conversations and rich conversations and that maturity of friendship when you have common interests. So I would certainly encourage people to push themselves, as you say, to join a local group or to volunteer a hobby class or even sign up for a new course. Usually I would consider that the in-person courses are and classes are probably a little bit better to make those friends. But certainly, you know, it's coming up to a new year now, and what better time to start that new chapter in your life?
And also, too, I think it's important, but again, you might disagree, I don't know, you can't fix everyone. You know, people, some people are fixers, and they find themselves in, you know, toxic relationships because they're good listeners or they understand, and they find themselves in... you can't fix effort. Now, I'm not talking about people that reach out for you in times of crisis. We're talking more about a consistent toxicity. You can't heal everyone, but you can work on yourself. And sometimes, Fiona, this is as bad or even worse than a romantic relationship or a family relationship, right? And sometimes people actually might need some support to deal with the fallout of a toxic relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you were saying, if you can't save everyone, I suppose it's like the drowning man analogy. So if someone's, you know, drowning, you have to save yourself first. So whilst you're able to try to throw them, you know, a rope or a lifeline or something, you can't drown yourself in trying to help another person. But absolutely, I think there's so many opportunities to develop and to broaden our social circles and to have that element of self-preservation as well. Even though we want to help other people, it's important that it's not to our own detriment too much. And of course, people go through horrific periods in their lives, whether it's bereavements or deep depressions or serious illnesses, and of course we have to be there for them, but really consider, particularly the friendship, if it's a long-term friendship, if it's a two-way friendship, and if they're also there for you in your hour of need.
Really interesting to hear from you, Fiona. Thank you so much for your time.
As I said, no problem.
Thanks
for
having me. I
land
with quite a few people. Look after yourself. Fiona O'Malley, CEO of Turn to Me. Anything in that you want to comment on? Does it sound familiar? Maybe you were in a toxic friendship and you had to get out of it. Maybe it was someone there for life. I'd be really interested in if you could take your phone out, perhaps, and text 086 60 25,000, or send a WhatsApp. You don't have to come on. It's just really to share experiences of that. Is that relatable? Welcome back to Wednesday's 9 till noon show. And because it is a Wednesday, it means we have the company of Chris Ashmore, because the Business Matters podcast, a very popular podcast and just one of our podcasts here at Highland Radio, the DL Debate, which is taking a break for the winter now, but we'll be back soon. The last episode of the DL Debate podcast is available for you right now in our listen back section. Brendan Devaney is joined by a whole host of guests reflecting on 2025 in the GEA world, looking forward to 2026. The school program is there on a Thursday night as well for you to listen as you wish. This show is podcast every single day on the website. It's available for you from 12:30. So there's an array of podcasts there for you. And that's only going to grow into the future as you choose to listen to your media in different ways. The Business Matters podcast is also a jewel in the crown there. And it's available for you sometime on a Wednesday when Chris hits publish. Have you hit publish yet?
Not yet.
No. Okay. Right. Before we get into it, I was chatting to Anne-Marie Conlon from the council yesterday about the Buy Donegal initiative. Well worth giving it another mention because we're in the throes of it now. I was on the website. I like what I saw.
Yes.
A lot on offer.
Indeed. Now, it's back for 2025, the Buy Donegal initiative. It's been developed by the council and the campaign began earlier this week. It runs through to December the 19th. So quite simply, if you go onto the website for Buy Donegal, just put that into Google, it'll come up and you will find almost 400 Donegal businesses there. So it's a great way to support local businesses. click on whichever one interests you and you can go in and place your order, etc., etc. And for those businesses who haven't signed up yet for the campaign, if you go into the Donegal.ie website, you can find out details as how to register. And I suspect this is something that's going to grow and go from strength to strength.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the council doesn't actually host your website. What it is pages of links with information and photos onto your website. It redirects people to your website. So it's great because it's a one-stop shop, right? And I think it's good for sparking ideas as people look to shop for Christmas. We still are in the award season, Chris, so to speak.
Yes, coming up shortly, the 2025 Donegal Enterprise Awards. They take place on December the 3rd at Rockhill House in Letterkenny. 10 finalists there, so recognising some of the best up-and-coming and some of the more established businesses as well. Always a big night. And good luck to all involved there.
Yes, I'm sure it's going to be a lovely night. Now, two Donegal employees are in the running for some nice awards.
Yeah, the two Donegal-based employers, Forward
Employers,
Emphasis,
I beg your pardon,
and Abbott Diabetes Care in Donegal Town. They've been nominated for a Generation Apprenticeship Employer of the Year Award. We're seeing a lot more people taking up apprenticeships, so this is a chance to recognise some of those rising stars.
Yeah, a lot of those companies also to, you know, provide in-house training, but training opportunities for people in-house to fill roles, you know, that maybe they're not fully qualified for, thinking towards the future. Right, there is a nice, sharp, one-hour business networking event coming up.
The Donegal Business Network, it's hosting a one-hour business networking event tomorrow. From 1 to 2 o'clock.
Is this like speed dating, but for businesses?
I'm
selling honey. What are you selling? I love you.
It's bringing people together. It's taking place in the local enterprise office in Ballyrain. Now, they generally meet very early in the morning, so this is for a chance maybe for the early bird haters to go along, see what it's all about, meet people from a various backgrounds. And look, it's by talking with each other and meeting people that you didn't know before. It all fosters new business leads. And so you do need to register by email, donegalbusinessnetwork@gmail.com. But it's worth having a look at and open to all.
Yeah, we started talking about By Donegal and that website redirecting people to businesses' online spaces. But that all has to start somewhere, Chris.
Indeed. And interesting to note that the Donegal Education and Training Board, they are actually going to run a 27-week course. It begins on the 1st of December at the Training Centre in the Business Park in Letterkenny. Now, this is a free internet learning course, how to use digital tools for communication, everyday online tasks, and that's going to be on Wednesdays from 1 to 4 o'clock. So contact the ETB for more if that's an area that you need to upskill in.
Yeah, for sure, and many do. Right, let's get to the podcast now, and to very different sort of businesses featuring this week, Chris.
Yeah, first up, Fudge and Gandol. Now, that's a new Donegal-based children's creativity company. Now, what's happening here? It was founded by Ballyshannon mum, Julie Dowling. Now, she works in an innovation centre in Sligo, and it all stemmed from her bedtime routine, telling stories to her own children. And she thought, well, let's have some story cards that we'll put out, and we talk about the cards. And so the idea was hatched that other families could try the same idea, and she has developed a pack which has lovely illustrated characters, locations, and it's all taking place in a fantasy world called Merndale. And Julie says the motto of her business here is screens off, imaginations on, and we can hear from her in this clip.
It's a world our kids will grow up in, won't reward people for remembering information. It will reward people for being able to figure things out. And I think that's sort of the link that I'm trying to build with these story cards and the use of your imagination and this creative storytelling. Because storytelling will train, I guess, flexible thinking and will build these skills in a way that children can relate to. And it's fun for them and it gets them away from screens, even just for a little bit. And I'm not anti-screens, by the way. Our motto is screens off, imagination on. I do believe there's a time and a place for everything. And as I said, I work in a world of, you know, automation, robotics and artificial intelligence. So I do believe that technology is good. But I just think that this is something that we need to lean into a little bit as well, in terms of like just getting our kids away from screens for just a little bit of time every now and again.
Yeah, and I think that's a space you really have to have a passion about, Chris, to dedicate yourself into it, as Julie clearly has.
Indeed, and look, it started off as a part-time enterprise, but she's got a great response. She's stocking the cards in a number of places in the Northwest. There's the online side of things as well, and so far a very positive reaction.
All right, now the second feature on the show.
Yeah, just to mention that there's an Irish startup company. Essentially what they're doing is it's gift vouchers for luxury hotels and spas. Now, they started off with just a few last year, and now it's called hotelandsparesorts.com is the website. They now have over 10,000 premium hotels all around the world, including ones in Donegal. So if you're looking for that gift voucher, which is redeemable against hotels, really nice hotels, hotelandsparesorts.com, and you'll see the Donegal hotels in there as well.
Nice idea. Mm. Just slightly above my pay grade at the moment, perhaps.
Well,
we'll see.
Okay. Christmas bonus.
Christmas bonus. The bonus is still having a job, Greg. Still having a job. That's your bonus. All right, then. Listen.
And thanks. Christmas Day off.
Christmas Day off, indeed. Listen, Chris Ashmore, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That podcast will be available for you very shortly. It's on air as well on Sundays.
Yes, indeed.
Did you mention
after
that?
The 6 o'clock news.
And your
on
contact
Sunday.
Deets?
Businessmatters@highlandradio.com is the email.
All right, we'll be back with the final segment of the show after this quick break. There's an oil spill from O'Donnell Park to Churchill. It's very slippery, I am told. The council have been notified, but it will take a while for them to get to it. Air to water. I know someone who wanted to install a new gas stove and no gas installers will install, as he has an air to water system. Why is this the case? Is the system too airtight? Why can you not have an air-to-water system and a gas cooker? Does anyone know? Well, we'll throw that out to the great public of the Northwest. Now, Sinead Sweeney is from OMA, who worked on Wicked in the makeup department as a lens technician. This is the stage show, the film?
It's the film, yeah. Both
on
films.
One and two?
I did, yes.
What was that experience like?
It was absolutely incredible. I mean, fortunate enough, we did them back to back, and I was pregnant throughout the entire thing, which was amazing. So,
extra pair of hands.
I know. I think I gave birth about a month after the two films. So, yeah, I've got a very musical baby now. But yeah, no, it was just one of the really incredible films that I've ever worked on. Really,
I can
to
imagine.
Get to hear them
How did
sing
you...
every day.
Yes, I can only imagine to have that firsthand. How did you transition from being an optometrist working and living in London to working on Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, the Bond films and so on?
I had been practicing for quite a few years and was kind of feeling ready for a career change. And it was literally by chance that a producer walked into one of the practices that a friend of mine and I worked in and asked if he would help out on a low budget zombie film with Danny Dyer in. And he said he needed some more lens technicians. So that was when we first realised this was, an opportunity outside of the usual optometry test room. And after that, it kind of snowballed. I mean, we got asked to work with Johnny Depp on Pirates of the Caribbean as our next kind of project. And, you know, word spread. It was quite a niche job, so there wasn't a lot of people doing it at the time. And it's kind of just grown and grown from there, really.
And what does your job then involve, generally speaking, on set?
We go in, we're there to insert the lenses. We basically make sure that they're comfortable day. We monitor how long they wear them for, if there's any issues. We have equipment there to make sure that we're dealing with things in an emergency situation. So really we're providing like an overall optical care. Some of the lenses that they wear are not that comfortable, so some will cover the whole of their eye, which is called a scleral lens.
Oh, no.
So these are much more challenging for the actors. You know, we want it to run smoothly. We don't want them to be thinking about their eyes when they're trying to perform or sing, for example. So really, we try and make that as an easy a transition as possible and there to support them, really.
Yeah, I think your bedside manner then becomes really important, because for a lot of people, you know, anyone going near their eyes outside of an optometrist, it's a bit icky, right?
I imagine then
what it's not just your expertise, but it must be you and how you engage with the actor.
For sure. I mean, especially now with the experience we've got, you know, the reassurance element, we want them to make sure that when they leave that production, they're going to leave with the same set of eyes as when they came in. A lot of it is just being there as a support network. And so you do, you know, you build quite strong bonds with these people that you're spending, you know, 14-hour shooting days with over the course of 9 months. So, yeah, so it's we all kind of work together as a team like that, from all the other elements as well, like hair, makeup, costume. So it becomes like a little family.
And these lenses, you know, they're not off the shelf. These are fashion specific. Is it per individual, or what level of development goes into actually creating these lenses?
Well, I mean, everything starts with an eye examination, a full lens fitting. We've got to make sure that their eyes are suitable. Everything that we do is pretty much custom made, bar a few things, but they're hand painted over the course of weeks by really specialist lens artists with tiny little lens brushes. So it's extremely intricate, the process. And then we obviously follow up then with a second fitting when the completed lens arrives, make sure that they understand the limitations on vision sometimes as well. So there is a lot that goes into it. Everything is custom.
And there are dozens of optometrists working on a film like Wicked. You then are assigned a specific actor.
Yeah, well, it depends on the need, really. So, for example, on Wicked, we had Fierro, lovely Jonathan Bailey, and Cynthia Erivo in lenses. We also had Ethan Slater in them to a point, until he suffered from a bit of an eye problem. So we kind of went to visual effects for him in the end. But on big shows like Lord of the Rings, we might have 25 to 30 opticians. We try and limit it so that, you know, you've only got a maximum of like three or four people to look after, just so you're giving them that dedicated level of care.
Did you see Ariana and Cynthia on set much? Did they get on okay?
Oh, they got on wonderful, yeah. They were just the sweetest. They loved each other.
Is it icky to be around? Not icky, sorry. Is it intense?
I can see how people might perceive that, but it's so entirely genuine. I mean,
I don't doubt it for a second. It's just
they had such a wonderful bond, and I think they're just very, I don't know, emotional people. But I mean, it was an emotional experience. I think they both really, this was like their ultimate dream. I mean, I think definitely Ariana had dreamed about it since she was a little girl. So the tears were flowing, especially towards the last day. So, yeah, there wasn't a dry eye on
wasn't
the project.
Dry,
but yeah.
Wasn't a dry lens in the house.
definitely no dry lenses that day.
Has little Ethan Slater put a spider in the works with using sort of post-production for lenses?
Well, it's just part of the process. So, you know, you'll try lenses. These things will creep up and it'll be nothing to do with the lenses. It's just an eye problem that is persisting. And if it's uncomfortable for them, there's always an option that we can say, look, we're not going to put you through this hell if it's not comfortable. So so they decided to do the rest of it in post. Which
and all of
sure
these films, have these been all in Britain and Ireland where you've done your work? Like, have you been to the Caribbean or Hollywood?
I haven't been to the Caribbean,
but
I have spent a lot of time in Iceland, in Italy. I mean, the Bond locations were always the beautiful ones. So,
who did you work with on the Bond films?
We did Christoph Waltz on No Time to Die. There was a real kind of bionic eye theme through the movie, and Primo, one of the other villains. So that was a really fun one, you know, getting to create this bionic eye that needs to look artificial, and for it to be a theme throughout the whole movie. That was really quite, that was one for the memory box for
Definitely.
Sure.
Are you good fun at Halloween personally?
Well, I like Halloween, but I do get a lot of phone calls saying, can you get me some lenses?
All right, brilliant. And so what's next? Do you have projects lined up, or do they come? I mean, obviously now your name is there, you know, up top of the list, so it's inevitable you'll get the calls. But how far ahead do you have to plan out your work? Is it like an actor? In other words, you have to free up your diary for weeks at a time.
We just kind of, as it comes in, we'll just deal with it and expand our team accordingly. I mean, we've got quite a few shows starting in January, but unfortunately, they're all NDA signed. But we've just finished on a Star Wars project, Supergirl. So the next season of The Witcher, which just got released. So there's quite a lot of stuff that will be coming out soon that you'll probably see our work on as
Great, and we'll have to scrutinize the titles now just to see your
Yeah,
name.
exactly.
Is it a company name or Sinead Sweeney?
iWorks for Film is the company, and it's run by myself and my work partner,
Apple
Victoria
haven't sent you
Warrington.
a cease and desist letter, I hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Sinead, it's been wonderful chatting to you. Continued success, you know.
Thank you.
I
Thank
think
you.
The work you do is kind of like eyebrows. You know it's there, but you don't necessarily
Exactly,
you shouldn't notice it, but you know it's there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Listen, thanks for your time. Best wishes.
Thank
to you.
Thanks
All
for
right,
having me.
Bye bye. Lovely to chat to you, Sinead Sweeney from Tyrone. That's where we leave it on the show today.